So let's meet a real big cat expert. J.A. Mills is one of the foremost conservationists working to save tigers. 20 years ago, when she was an undercover international wildlife investigator, she stumbled on a horrific trade in tiger farming. In a new memoir called The Blood of the Tiger, she tells the story of the battle to save one of the world's most endangered species. Steve Paulson talked with her.
Judy, can you tell me about the first time you ever saw a tiger in the wild?
The first time I saw a tiger in the wild was in India, and I had been taken there by a good friend of mine into a tiger reserve called Ranthambore. And we were looking for tigers and finally saw one in the tall grass, crouched down on a hill, looking down at some sambar deer who were feeding in a pond below. And the thing that was fascinating to me about this animal was that it reminded me of my house cats, except that it was so enormously bigger. And it was so majestic. I think it's really important to see them in their natural habitat and to see them hunt. I saw this female take down a deer to feed her three awaiting cubs.
What was that like to see a tiger take down a deer?
Well, I don't think I took a breath until it was all over, but it did happen very quickly. Here is this animal of this absolutely bright orange, black, and stark white, very carefully sniffing out her strategy, and then in a moment leaping toward her prey and running at, I don't even know how fast she was running, but before we knew it, she was on this deer and had it by the neck and mercifully choked the life out of it very quickly. And as she walked away, I was so sorry to see her go, and I knew she had to feed her cubs. But more than anything, I wanted to protect her. I wanted to protect her and her kind because I had never seen such magnificence.
Now, you said that the tigers you saw actually reminded you of your house cats. It's just kind of hard to believe. I mean, how much of a resemblance did you see?
Well, the thing is I was with my friend and another person, another Indian man, both of them very, very experienced with tigers, and they wanted to leave because they thought she was going to settle in for a nap. But I had noticed the way her whiskers were going forward, the way my cat's whiskers go forward when they are playing with a cat and mouse and wanting to pounce on it. And I said, no, no, we shouldn't go. Something's going to happen here. And afterward, they asked me, how did you, someone who's never seen a tiger before, know what was going to happen? And I said, because that's what my cats do. And so the gestures were the same. The looks were so similar, except the paws, of course, were the size of my head.
Right. Now, you say that you became bewitched into what has been called the cult of the tiger. What does it mean to fall under the spell of the tiger?
Well, I have seen it happen to others. I think anyone who has seen a tiger in the wild becomes beguiled to either help them or to capture that essence. And I think that there are many people who want to own that essence. And that is part of what's driving what I think is the biggest threat to the survival of wild tigers today.
Now, I know for you, the story really goes back to the early 1990s when you were an investigator with the World Wildlife Fund, and you went undercover in China. What did you find there?
Yes, I went to China for the first time in 1991 to verify rumors that the government there was farming bears for the bile in their gallbladders and actually milking them of their bile while they were still living. And I will never forget the moment when my government minder turned to me and said that China intended to farm not just bears, but a long list of other species like cows and pigs. And as it turned out, they were indeed farming bears by the thousands and milking them of their bile. But I didn't see that. And in order to keep me from seeing that, my hosts took me to a mink farm that happened to have a handful of tigers. And it was there that staff showed me a handwritten ledger that they were filling up with orders for tiger bone.
Wait, so this was a tiger farm. I mean, they were raising tigers to then harvest their body parts?
Yes, this was the handful of tigers that spawned the tiger farming industry in China today, which now has between 5,000 and 6,000 tigers for the making of tiger bone wine and tiger skin home decor.
You'll have to explain this. So why would people want wine made out of tiger bone?
initially, tiger farming was started because China was using tiger bone in traditional Chinese medicines that were being manufactured on a large scale. That stopped in 1993. The traditional Chinese medicine industry globally made a decision many years ago that they didn't want to use tiger bone because they didn't want to be blamed for the extinction of wild tigers. This was a strategic business decision. They wanted to have Chinese medicine practiced alongside Western medicine around the world, and they knew that wasn't going to happen if they continued to consume the body parts of these beloved animals.
So what happened then?
So what happened is the farms kept on growing, and the investors began creating wineries where tiger skeletons were steeping in wine. And this is no longer about health. This is about wealth. It became apparent that this could be a multi-billion-dollar industry.
So the Chinese government knows this is happening.
The Chinese government actually supported it. China's wildlife protection law actually calls for the farming and consumption of a long list of endangered species, including tigers. Now, there are Chinese within China who are now working within the National People's Congress to try to take out the farming and consumption mandate, but that hasn't happened yet. So in the meantime, the ministry that's in charge of protecting wildlife is also the ministry that has invested in these farms and even paid for some of the wineries to be built.
Now, this sounds truly horrible. I mean, the idea of basically killing tigers, harvesting their body parts. But I would think maybe the silver lining would be if these tigers are being bred in captivity, at least they're not being hunted in the wild. Maybe tigers could survive in the wild. Is that happening?
That's sort of the intuitive conclusion. But unfortunately, the problem with tiger farming is that it stimulates demand, and that in turn stimulates poaching of wild tigers because the products from wild tigers are considered superior, more prestigious, and exponentially more valuable. Think of tiger bone wine from farms as maybe wine at the supermarket, and wine made from the bones of wild tigers as the 1945 Chateau Mouton Rothschild that sold at Christie's a few years back for more than $100,000. There are some people who are investing in products from wild tigers as they would invest in gold or rare art. They are basically hoping to bank on extinction.
And then there are some notorious stories of how tigers are used for social status. I mean, there's this one story of a man who was a businessman, I believe, who actually had a tiger electrocuted at a banquet, and then he ate the tiger.
Yes, while his friends were watching. But there is this culture in China where my Chinese friends use this phrase. They eat everything with its back to the sun except airplanes and tables. And the more exotic the animal, the more prestige to the person eating or serving it, but also it's thought to be more healthful as well. And this is a tradition that comes down from China's emperors. The emperors had their famous banquets that included bear paw, moose nose, tiger meat, and a long list of other things that most of us have never heard of.
Now, I'm assuming there are people in China, conservationists, who think this is appalling. I mean, that this whole system that you're describing, are there efforts to crack down on these tiger farms?
Polls repeatedly show that a majority of people in China want the ban on tiger products to stay in place, and they find it an embarrassment to their beloved country. They're media savvy. They know what the world is saying about it, and they don't want to have the blood of the last tigers on their hands. So there's that going on. And then there are conservationists and others, attorneys and animal welfare advocates, all Chinese, who are working together behind the scenes to try to change the law. But unfortunately, the National People's Congress go-to ministry on this issue is the State Forestry Administration, and that is also the ministry that is supporting tiger farming.
I have to say, I mean, listening to you, it sounds fairly hopeless. I mean, if we're talking about the future prospects of tigers in the wild.
Well, it is hopeless if people don't start talking about it, because what has happened is that this particular ministry with a vested interest in tiger farming has actually been threatening conservationists and governments alike. I know for a fact that NGOs working on this issue, foreign NGOs working on this issue in China, have been threatened with being kicked out of the country. And it's had a chilling effect such that people aren't talking about it. This is one of the reasons why I wrote the book. And this is one of the reasons why I am telling everyone that they can have a part in changing this. And they can do that by talking about it, to anyone, one-on-one, on Facebook, on Twitter, more importantly, letting elected government representatives know that we would like the United States government to take a strong stance on this. We have to make it okay to talk about it.
Now, very few of our listeners will ever see a wild tiger. What do we lose if tigers go extinct?
Well, some people believe there's an existence value. I personally, yes, I've seen one in the wild, but I love the idea that this majestic animal exists, that it's out there. These tigers, this species, is the living embodiment of centuries of human lore. And if you look around, look at all the college teams that have tigers as mascots. Look at all the products that are sold with the image of tiger, or the tiger brand name, or Tiger Woods. This is a creature that we have admired throughout time. And think about that iconic creature in a feedlot. And the other issue, too, is that wild tigers are very important in terms of the health of our planet. One of my Indian friends says that tigers keep forests standing, because when there are tigers in a forest, that forest is protected, the trees are left standing, and those trees are the lungs of our planet. And many people have said that if we can't save wild tigers, what can we save? Can we even save ourselves? But I do want to emphasize that if people, just regular people, start speaking up, there's hope. There is hope. It's not too late, but we have to act now.
At the last count, there were just 3,000 tigers left in the wild. J.A. Mills is a tiger conservationist and author of Blood of the Tiger. Steve Paulson talked with her. Coming up, we've been talking about cats this hour, but we saved a little time for dogs. I'm Ann Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.